Today is Thursday, March 4th, and you are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, police warn of threat to the U.S. Capitol.
And the threat appears connected to a far-right conspiracy theory that Donald Trump will again take power March 4th.
Also, UN agency relocates thousands of Central African refugees from dangerous border areas.
Most Central African refugees are now living along riverbanks in hard-to-reach border areas among host communities with extremely limited resources.
Plus, a report on the global decline of freedom. These stories and more are next. Capitol Police say they have intelligence about a potential plot to breach the Capitol on Thursday. AP correspondent Sagar Morgani reports.
March 4th, what used to be Presidential Inauguration Day, and the threat appears connected to a far-right conspiracy theory that Donald Trump will again take power March 4th. Capitol Police say the intelligence indicates an unidentified militia group may try to breach the building. Its statement came as Acting Chief Yogananda Pittman was before a House panel but refused to give more details.
That intelligence is law enforcement sensitive.
There's been considerably less online chat than in the lead-up to January's Capitol attack, and there is still a big fence around the building, cutting off all entry. Sagar Morgani, Washington.
The U.S. House of Representatives canceled its planned Thursday session after the Capitol Police warned Wednesday about a threat to the building, which was subjected to a deadly attack on January 6th. Gloria So of Reuters reports.
The U.S. House of Representatives canceled its session planned for Thursday after Washington, D.C. police warned that a militia group could be plotting to attack the Capitol. The latest warning comes amid heightened security at the Capitol building, spurred by January's deadly attack there by supporters of former President Donald Trump. The House had scheduled for Thursday to debate and vote on a police reform bill, but a Democratic aide said plans changed after intelligence that an identified militia group could present a security threat. Some right-wing conspiracy theorists have falsely claimed that Trump, who lost the election to President Joe Biden, should be sworn in for a second term on Thursday, on a day some have described as, quote, the true inauguration day. Before 1937, some U.S. presidents had been inaugurated on March 4th, but ever since, the official day has remained January 20th. Earlier this week, a House official notified lawmakers of a possible security threat spanning Thursday through Saturday. The Justice Department has so far charged over 300 people who took part in January's siege of the Capitol, including members of right-wing extremist groups like the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. In a statement, it said the United States Capitol Police Department is, quote, aware of and prepared for any potential threats, and working with local, state, and federal agencies to prevent them. Meanwhile, the Senate will convene as planned on Thursday to debate Biden's $1.9 trillion economic relief bill.
That's Gloria Tso of Reuters. Nearly 75% of the world's population lives in countries where freedom is declining, including in the United States, according to a new report by the Washington-based research and advocacy group Freedom House. White House correspondent Patsy Widaskiwara has more on the Democratic backsliding.
From Indian farmers' protests to clashes between law enforcement and supporters of Black Lives Matter, the world's two largest democracies, the United States and India, are part of a global trend showing a decline in democratic policies and institutions, according to the Freedom of the World 2021 annual report by Freedom House. The Washington-based think tank focuses on democracy and human rights around the world. Amy Slipowitz is the report's research manager.
The pandemic has really exacerbated this long-term democratic decline. A lot of undemocratic leaders seized on it and used it as an opportunity to consolidate power.
Freedom House's report rates people's access to political rights and civil liberties in 210 countries and territories. In 2020, 45 more countries had declining scores compared to those with improving ones, a trend that has continued for the past 15 years.
Hands up! Don't shoot! Hands up! Don't shoot!
The United States is still considered free but fell 3 points since last year, a large drop for an established democracy and mostly driven by lack of transparency under the Trump administration. Freedom House, Amy Slipowitz.
One way this manifested was the dismissal of inspectors general and the undermining of other institutions that are meant to hold government leaders accountable. But the kind of second part of this is the pandemic. It really showed this disregard for transparency. The federal government and also some state governments propagated false or misleading information. They obscured pandemic-related data and just generally caused a lot of confusion and politicized the response.
This democratic erosion is not new. The U.S. has fallen 11 points in the past decade. Noting the siege of the U.S. Capitol by Trump supporters earlier this year, on Wednesday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken underscored the need to bolster democratic institutions. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says the Biden administration will promote democracy abroad, but not through costly military interventions, which he said had failed in the past. Blinken's comment came Wednesday as he outlined President Joe Biden's foreign policy objectives, as VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
With the U.S. military now operating in Iraq for 30 years and in Afghanistan for 20 years, critics of military interventionism have long called for the United States to bring its troops home and forgo future regime change efforts. On Wednesday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the Biden administration will forge its own course, seeking to promote democracy by example, not by force.
We will incentivize democratic behavior, but we will not promote democracy through costly military interventions or by attempting to overthrow authoritarian regimes by force. We've tried these tactics in the past. However well-intentioned, they haven't worked.
Blinken said military interventions have given democracy promotion a bad name and have lost the confidence of the American people. He promised the Biden administration will do things differently, including shoring up democracy at home as a foreign policy imperative. Blinken said China is the biggest threat, because it is the only country with the power to challenge and destabilize an open international system. He said Washington must engage Beijing from a position of strength.
That requires working with allies and partners, not denigrating them, because our combined weight is much harder for China to ignore. It requires engaging in diplomacy and in international organizations, because where we've pulled back, China has filled in.
Acknowledging he and many members of the new administration, including Joe Biden, served under President Barack Obama, Blinken rejected any notion that the current team is a restoration of the Obama administration. He said that time has passed and Biden will see the world with fresh eyes. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Five fighter jets flying at low altitude were seen in Myanmar's second city of Mandalay on Thursday, a day after the bloodiest crackdown by security forces against protesters. The United Nations said 38 people were killed Wednesday in the most violent day of unrest since last month's military coup. Police and soldiers opened fire with live rounds with little warning, witnesses said. The UN Security Council will discuss the situation on Friday in a closed meeting, diplomats said. The United States was, quote, appalled, unquote, by Myanmar's security forces' violent crackdown that reportedly killed 38 people protesting a military coup on Wednesday, State Department spokesman Ned Price said. Price called on Myanmar authorities to release an Associated Press journalist and five other members of the media who have been detained and charged with violating a public order law.
We are appalled and revulsed to see the horrific violence perpetrated against the people of Burma for their peaceful calls to restore civilian governance. We call on all countries to speak with one voice to condemn brutal violence by the Burmese military against its own people and to promote accountability for the military's actions that have led to the loss of life of so many people in Burma. We are deeply concerned about the increasing attacks on and arrests of journalists. We call on the military to immediately release these individuals and to cease intimidation and harassment of the media and others unjustly detained merely for doing their jobs. In our policy response to the Burmese military's coup, its overthrow of the civilian democratically elected government, in the first instance, we are not going to do anything that worsens the suffering, the humanitarian suffering of the Burmese people. We are not going to institute measures that would redound on them. Our measures are going to continue to be very tightly targeted at the members of the military.
That's State Department spokesman Ned Price. The international aid group Save the Children said it is one of the first aid agencies to reach displaced families in Aksum in Ethiopia's central Tigray region. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
Save the Children says it is one of the first aid agencies to reach displaced families in the Tigrayan town of Aksum in Ethiopia. The organization released video shot on February 8th showing the distribution of food, shelter and sanitation to those displaced by conflict. Save the Children's communication manager, Christiana Martin, filmed this message from a school that has been turned into a camp.
The conditions are really terrible. They are overcrowded. There are up to 30 families living per classroom. We're hoping today that the aid that we distribute, the essential food, will see these families through for the next month. As of yet, none of these IDPs have received any humanitarian assistance. Save the Children are the first on the ground.
Aksum is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, famed for its tall obelisks and ancient churches. It has also been the site of some of the most brutal fighting in Ethiopia. On Friday, Amnesty and Tigrayan forces of killing hundreds of civilians in northern Ethiopia over 24 hours last November, an incident it described as a potential crime against humanity. Eritrea has rejected the accusations, but an Ethiopian state human rights body issued a statement that also described such killings, though with fewer details. It was a rare official acknowledgement from Ethiopia that Eritrean troops participated in the conflict during the government's crackdown in the Tigray region last year. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government declared victory over the Tigray People's Liberation Front after its forces withdrew from major cities and towns at the end of November. However, low-level fighting has continued in some parts of Tigray.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. Northern Irish loyalist paramilitary groups have said they are temporarily withdrawing support for the 1998 peace agreement due to concerns over Britain's withdrawal from the European Union, while the groups pledge, quote, a peaceful and democratic, quote, opposition to the Brexit deal. The stark warning increases the pressure on British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, his Irish counterpart Michael Martin, and the European Union. The peace agreement ended decades of violence between groups wanting Northern Ireland to join the Irish Republic and pro-British unionist groups. A senior Israeli Justice Ministry official says the country has yet to decide whether it will cooperate with the International Criminal Court's investigation into alleged crimes in the Palestinian territories. The decision by the court's departing prosecutor to probe Israel's military actions and settlement construction on lands captured in 1967 Mideast War was announced Wednesday. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu condemned it as, quote, the essence of anti-Semitism and hypocrisy, unquote. You are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Yemen's Houthi rebels said they attacked a Saudi oil facility in the port city of Jeddah, a missile strike not immediately acknowledged by Saudi Arabia. It's the latest in a series of airborne assaults the group has claimed against the kingdom amid the grinding war in Yemen. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Monday that a disappointing $1.7 billion had been pledged for humanitarian aid in Yemen in 2021, warning that cutting aid is a death sentence. The United Nations is seeking $3.85 billion to avert a famine in Yemen. The UN chief called for an immediate nationwide ceasefire and a set of confidence-building measures followed by an inclusive Yemen-led political process under UN auspices supported by the international community. VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy discussed these developments with Ahmed Fathi, a global affairs political analyst and managing editor of American TV News in New York.
The countries have less resources to allocate to aid programs. This is number one in terms of financing. Number two, there is a sense that we have been putting money to avert famine, which is a humanitarian cause. But what about the main instigator of this crisis that have led to that? And namely, they are referring to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia will probably at the end fit most of the bill because first, it's in their next door neighbor. Any outbreak of mass famine will result in one thing, an overflow by millions of Yemeni across the Saudi borders. The second thing is that discrepancy between the 1.7 billion raised compared to the required, which is about 4 billion, this indicates a little bit of concern from the member state. During 2020, which the budget was allocated in 2019 for the international organization, there were lots of savings. Were these savings and efficiencies that generated utilizing, for example, new technologies like video conferencing instead of physical travel that have reduced it tremendously? The other thing is the overhead expenses associated with humanitarian operation. Stringent rules they might have in the secretariat, but operating in the field in a humanitarian crisis, it's a totally, totally different story. The bottom line of the conflict in Yemen, it's a proxy war between a Sunni-dominated monarchy and Islamic Republic on the other side, which is a Shiite-dominated. So it's a sect. In one word and in geopolitical terms, it's the competition between the Saudis and the Iranians. Who should pay for the humanitarian crisis? I think it's only fair that the Saudis and the Iranians should absorb. Iranians are supporting the Houthis. Saudis are supporting so-called legitimate government, bombardment, civilian targets, field hospitals, schools, funerals. It's a huge disappointment on a humanitarian level.
The UN chief stressed that all actions must be driven by a peaceful resolution to the conflict, and he called for an immediate nationwide ceasefire and a set of confidence-building measures, with appointing a U.S. special envoy to Yemen and cutting U.S. arms to Saudi Arabia and pressuring the Houthis. Help?
As far as appointing the U.S. special envoy to Yemen, I think it's much needed. The situation is escalating. There is no political will to sit down for peace. If history told us anything, that the end of such conflict happens when either the two parties are completely depleted their resources, which is not likely to happen in this conflict, or the two parties have reached to a point that they cannot sustain the human losses they have on both sides. Unfortunately, such military conflicts can sustain. It will depend how deep is your pocket, and that is available on both sides. As far as the U.S. is concerned, U.S. suspended only the sales of special ammunition, which is the smart bombs. The United States, under the President Biden administration, want to come to a peaceful resolution in Yemen, in Syria, in Libya, in all the hotspots, not only the Middle East, but also beyond the Middle East. As far as the Secretary General proposal for a peaceful resolution, everybody agrees that the military conflict will not lead to anything but more destruction. However, the main players in the Yemen is in Riyadh, Tehran, and Abu Dhabi. If there is no agreement between these three parties, I don't see any avenue for a peaceful resolution.
That's my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawy, speaking with Ahmed Fathi, a global affairs political analyst in New York. Farmers in northern India have led a three-month-long protest against three agricultural laws that aim to reform the farm sector, but which they fear will impact their livelihoods. Anjana Pasricha visited a village in Haryana state to talk to farmers about why they are standing firm on their demand that the laws must be repealed.
This massive farmers' protest along Delhi's highways against three new farm laws is now in its fourth month. It draws its sustenance from deepening discontent in villages like the Riyapur. Bhagwan Dahiya's livelihood has become more precarious. High-yielding varieties have depleted soil nutrition and water tables. Extreme weather events that can ruin crops have become more frequent. Dahiya feels his labor does not fetch adequate returns, but he does not know what else to do.
We have no choice but to farm our lands. I am not educated, and in this country, even qualified people don't get jobs. Who will give me one? And how can I move to another area of work when I am 45 years old?
The disillusionment is echoed by others who mostly own small farms of less than 2 hectares.
Young people like me want to leave farming. We slog the whole day in the fields and there is such little profit.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi has repeatedly assured farmers that the new laws will improve rural incomes and encourage private investment in the agricultural sector. But these villagers echo fears voiced at protest sites of being exposed to market forces at a time when they already face rising uncertainties.
The farmers here are not so educated that they'll be able to negotiate with private players. They feel scared of being cheated. In the current system, at least they get paid.
Some walk to protest sites. Others travel in tractors to join the rallying cry of farmers, legalizing a decades-old practice of price guarantees set by the government for 23 crops.
MSP pay legal guarantee.
There must be a law to offer minimum prices. Private players will not give us a good price without a legal guarantee.
As farmers browse the newspaper for latest news of the protest, this countryside vows to support the campaign till the laws are scrapped, however long it takes. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Daryapur, Haryana, North India.
Nigeria has one of the world's highest numbers of out-of-school children, 13.2 million, according to the UN Children's Fund, UNICEF. A wave of school kidnappings has worsened the situation, with some state authorities closing down boarding schools in their states until security is guaranteed. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
The most recent attack on schools in Nigeria came last Friday when gunmen abducted 279 schoolgirls from a government secondary school in northwestern Zamfara state. A week before then, some 42 people, including 27 schoolboys, were kidnapped in a school in Kagara in central Niger state. So far, all abducted school children have been freed through negotiations. But UNICEF says the recent spate of abductions is having a huge impact on education in Nigeria. Peter Hawkins is UNICEF Nigeria country representative.
At a time when the pandemic is rife, and some parents have withdrawn their children from school or have not sent their children back to school, the insecurity and the threat to educational facilities can only compound an already difficult situation.
Since the recent wave of kidnappings by criminal gangs demanding ransom, many state authorities, including those in Kano, Yobe, Niger and Zamfara, have ordered the closure of boarding schools. Nigeria Union of Teachers spokesperson Emmanuel Huandi says the closures will have consequences.
It will disrupt the free flow of academic calendar. It will disrupt the flow of the children's educational pursuit to subject the child to trauma.
UNICEF says the closing down of schools is not the best approach.
The answer for insecurity against schools is not to close the schools down. It's to improve the security, improve the connection between the school and the community, so the community themselves offer some semblance of security.
Most of the affected children can be found in the crisis-hit north of the country. Many accuse the government of being insensitive to the dangers there. President Muhammadu Buhari has promised to bolster security around schools while adding that security forces will continue to apply restraint when dealing with bandits to avoid children being used as human shields. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. And have a great day.